practical web accessibility tips. Welcome to WebAx Podcast 52, the RHEL Attribute. This is your host, Dennis.
And I'm back. I'm Ross.
Good to have you back, Ross.
Thanks. How's it going today?
Pretty good. Ross and I are managing our three-hour time difference now, doing the transcontinental podcast, so I had to get up a little earlier than what I'd like to on a Sunday, but that's okay. Let's see. Yeah, and I got this new headset from my day job. It works really well, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I got a new one, too. It's, this time, like, my old one, you know, was just the standard two-ear ones, but now this is just one because I'm using Skype for incoming and outcoming calls now, and I need to kind of be able to hear what's going on also.
Right.
My other ear, so working out pretty good so far.
Cool. Hey, let me see. Plantronics. Mine's a Plantronics. Anyways.
This is a lab tech, and it is Skype certified, apparently.
Cool.
That's what it says.
How much did that run you?
I think it was like $30.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, not too bad.
Maybe I'll check that out. Anyways, welcome again. We're going to do a couple news and announcements. Well, a few. News and announcements items, and then we'll get on to our main segment about the RHEL, or relationship attribute, and how that affects web accessibility. So the first item I wanted to announce is, Ross got interviewed for with the Ann Arbor newspaper, local newspaper, so that was kind of exciting.
Yeah, it was really cool. My office is kind of like a shared collaborative environment. We've got five companies in a relatively big but somewhat open office space, and we end up doing a lot of collaborative work, and the Ann Arbor News found out about it and thought it was pretty cool and came by and interviewed me and then Derek from InGenX Group, who's another company there. So it's pretty cool. Exciting stuff.
Yeah, very cool. And then another personal note, just to give you a heads up, I'm writing a blog post on the captchas.net service, so look for that coming real soon on my personal blog, and you can find that at DennisLumbery.com. It's just a free service. I believe we mentioned it a while back, but it's called captchas.net. And it's a real good service for providing web-accessible CAPTCHA for form validation. You know, when you enter, like, the letters showing in that graphical box or whatever, to validate that you're actually a human using the form. And
Seems like a pretty cool service.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And so it provides that, and it includes, an audio alternative of the letter showing. So for the visually impaired, you could just do the audio. Or if you can't read the letters, because sometimes it's difficult with captures, you could listen to it. Or just for shits and giggles or whatever.
See what accent the person has.
Yeah, but it's a pretty neat service, and it's all it's all server side, so there's no JavaScript issues, and it's just real good for web accessibility.
Yeah, it seems like the best one that I've come across. That isn't kind of like burdensome to implement. So
right,
it's pretty good.
Okay, next announcement. Yeah, I've mentioned this before. I'll mention it one more time. At my new day job here in California, we're hiring a couple accessibility related positions. So if you're interested, send me an email or a blog comment or whatever. One of them is doing front end development, like I'm doing. working with me on XHTML. Why can't I say that? said it one more too many times. And you know, obviously web accessibility and some DOM scripting and things like that. And the other one is actually in the web accessibility job, but in the QA department. So checking for web accessibility and ensuring that all the, you know, everything is being met. And it's for a web application called Yodlee Money Center. And so you can find out more about the company at yodlee.com, Yodlee.com. Or like I said, just send me a message, webax@gmail.com.
And that's located in Northern California?
Yeah, in Silicon Valley, in Redwood City, in between San Jose and San Francisco. So it's a really cool area.
Yeah, Dennis was telling me the weather's very nice, so you should check into it.
Yeah, it's warm and sunny in the day, cool at night. Can't beat it.
Nope, I'm jealous.
Okay, and next news bit. I came across this video interview of Sean Henry, a lady who works for the W3C Web Accessibility Initiative. It's a video interview from a gentleman in Japan. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty, you know, neat interview. She talks about different things going on in her personal background and everything. But it's like subtitled in well, depending, there's two versions I think you could select, and you know, and. And it's subtitled in English or Japanese or whatever, and like it's pretty neat. So check that out if you get a chance.
And then it sounds like you went to a Flash captioning seminar. How was it?
Well, it was an online, an e-seminar, I think is what Adobe called it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just online. And that was from Andrew Kirkpatrick at Adobe. Put this on. It was pretty cool, and talking about the latest tools for captioning in Flash, and yeah, it's pretty neat to see how easy it is to do now, and it's pretty crazy how big and powerful Flash is now. You know, that program, and
yeah,
how much it can do, and although it's, yeah, you know, it's a lot more complex than it used to be, but.
Yeah, and that seems like one of the things about Flash is, like, it's capable of doing a whole lot of accessibility, you know, things, but nobody knows how to do it.
Exactly.
So, exactly. They're doing the right thing, you know, having seminars and trying to teach everybody.
Oh, yeah, totally. And this, it was a good seminar, and I'm not sure. I'll have to check to see if they have notes or anything on the, Adobe's website, but, yeah, but you're right. It's good that they're trying to put that out there. And because, like you said, Flash can be very accessible, but not a lot of people know how to do it.
Yeah.
But we'll be talking about it more possibly in the next podcast, because we may be interviewing Andrew Kirkpatrick, which would be really cool.
Yeah, very exciting.
Okay, you want to do the last announcement?
Yeah, Refresh Detroit, we are actually taking 1 month off this month just because we couldn't find anyone who wanted to talk, but our last meeting was great. We had tons of people. Actually, the local Ruby on Rails group came and kind of stayed and learned and that sort of thing. So next month, and that'll be August, we are going to have a meeting last Wednesday of the month, and we'll be talking about different JavaScript libraries and why you might want to learn one over the other. So,
well, that's a good topic.
Yeah.
Speaking of, it just hit me. I'm going to, I have to figure out how I'm going to get there. In downtown San Francisco, at the end of the month, there's an Ajax conference going on.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and they're going to be talking about Ajax, you know, / JavaScript libraries. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that should be another good one.
I think
there's so many libraries out there now. It's like,
yeah, really? Yeah. I think one of the sessions, I think it's the very last session, has to do with Ajax and accessibility.
Oh, good. Well, at least they're talking about it.
Yeah, at least they have one session on it, so I'll probably interject some questions about accessibility in the other sessions. People will be like, what are you talking about?
That last one.
Everyone will be like, you can browse without JavaScript?
Why would you want to do that? Text browser.
When would you do that? All right. Well, that's enough about that.
Yeah. So if anybody's in the area and wants to hear Dennis give them a hard time, should show up.
Yeah, and if you're anywhere in the Detroit area, Southeast Michigan area, or Northern Ohio area, check out refresh-detroit.org and show up for a meeting. They are very cool.
They are?
Very fun.
If I do say so myself.
Did you guys... Okay, you didn't pick a location for the next one then, right?
No, my guess is probably going to end up at my office again.
Oh, yeah.
Just because we can't get people to say for sure if they're going to come or not, so... It ends up being easy. I don't know. I'm going to... Not quite sure yet, so stay posted. Check the website.
Okay. Great. Well, off to our main segment. WebEx.
Yep, main segment, the rel attribute. So, essentially... The rel attribute, it's an attribute, and it tends to go on link tags in the head and then also in anchor tags in the body. And the W3C says that it basically just describes the relationship from the current document to another, which is specified in the href attribute.
And then I guess in the case of the link, I take that back. Sorry. And Ross dug up another kind of definition, I guess, of the rel attribute, and it says the rel describes the relationship of a hyperlink in terms of what the destination href is to the source or from the source's perspective.
Yep. So I think the most common one that everybody... hopefully his user knows is the rel equals style sheet. I think this tend to learn that pretty early on.
Which is in the link tag in the head when you're linking style sheets.
Yeah. And so basically that's saying that the relationship of the style sheet to the document is that it's a style sheet.
Exactly.
Now
where does this come into web accessibility? There's two areas. Navigation is a big one. So you could add, main links like your home, forward, next, or help. You could add those links into the head of your document. And, you know, using the rel attribute, you could say what kind of link it is. And not many browsers or users will use that, but it's just an additional thing you could do for web accessibility in case the user is using it, or maybe in the future, you know, it'll be used for other things. But basically, there's lots of different, links that you could name in there. Start, previous and next, contents, glossary, help, section, appendix, and so on and so forth.
Yep. So basically, if you have one of these user agents that supports it, like links, the text browser does, up at the top, it would show you, you know, there's a kind of like a navigation where there's a start, or you can go to the next page if you want to designate. There's a, you know, a logical flow from one page to the other. Previous contents, that sort of thing, help, and Opera.
So that's cool. So an Opera, like an automatic, a toolbar would automatically like appear at the top, and they would give you those links.
Yeah. And I guess Mozilla has it, and then Firefox, there's actually a plugin called the Link Toolbar that you can download, and it'll give you that functionality. So, as far as I could find out, no screen readers use it yet, but hopefully, you know, as it gets used more often, I mean, I could see that as a really valuable tool to be able to browse around easier. You know, it could kind of replace the skip links almost.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not too sure about that topic either. If anyone else, or that specific use, I should say, if anyone else out there knows anything more about that, then give us a comment on this podcast post.
Yeah, we'd love to know where it's being used, because seems like right now it's not a whole lot of places, but I can see it definitely being used more as user agents tend to support it more, or start to support it better.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm just looking up one or two other uses that I think we might have forgot to write down. Like, another use of the rel attribute is the shortcut icon.
Yeah.
So when you're in the head, when you do your link to your shortcut icon, that's what you use, the rel attribute shortcut space icon, and then your type and your href.
Yep. And so that's, you know, the little favicon that appears that everybody tends to love on their websites.
Favelet,
that's it, yeah. And if you make a bookmark, it keeps the same thing.
Hey, I got another use.
Great.
The, your RSS feed, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we forgot about that one.
So that's a big one.
When you put in your RSS feed in the head of your document, well, you don't have to, but it's a good idea to. Like on my Check Engine USA website, if you go to the news page, at the top I got a link to the news RSS feed. So I got the link rel equals alternate, and then type equals application RSS plus XML, and then you put in the title and your href of that RSS feed, and that information will go to your RSS reader.
Yeah. Yeah, and the relationship alternate's used pretty often also for alternate style sheets. You know, some browsers you can view all the different style sheets and select an alternate one, or even if you have like a JavaScript method of switching style sheets, usually instead of putting the relationship as style sheet, you'll put it as relationship alternate.
Excellent point.
So,
yeah, I haven't really used those, but I've seen those JavaScript, tutorials and examples that you could grab off the web. They're not too hard to find. And
yeah.
Do your style sheet switchers.
Yeah, which, you know, there's some debate as far as should you have a low vision version or should your site just be scalable and easy to read from the beginning. But if you choose to do it that way, you probably using the rel alternate.
Okay, let's mention one other use of the rel attribute. We're starting to come up with a lot of uses. But we'll talk about the use with unobtrusive JavaScript in a minute, which has more to do with web accessibility. But just to mention, one last one is the nofollow.
Yep. So this is made popular by Google. And
Go ahead.
Essentially, it's anytime you link to a site in Google and most of the search engines' perspective, you're like voting for their site. You're saying, hey, I like this site, and so they will rank better. But because people spam blogs to try and get links through comments, Google invented the rel equals nofollow, which basically means I'm linking to the site, but I'm not voting for them. So it's a way to not pass on your Google juice if you don't like the site or don't want people to be...
That's a good way spammed. To put it.
Yeah.
Another explanation is, like, say you're writing a blog and you're saying, I love this restaurant, you know, and you link to them. You're like, but I hate this restaurant, you know, the food is bad, don't go there. You could put the link to that bad restaurant, but you don't want to really vote for them, you know, as far as the search engines and stuff. So you could put the nofollow attribute on there.
Exactly.
Actually, now that we mention it, I think there's like some kind of negative connotation that you could put on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forget what that is. Maybe that's a that could be a microformats thing.
It could be, because there is, with microformats, there's like a whole review format, so maybe that falls into there.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But that was another point we were going to come up with, what we were going to mention is microformats, and that makes a lot of use of the rel attribute.
Yeah. And a lot of people use the rel attribute for unobtrusive JavaScript. You know, Lightbox is a real common one that a lot of people use, and basically any image you want or any link that you want to use the whole Lightbox, the image pops up on the screen. You do a rel equals lightbox. But one of the interesting things is if you use a relationship that's not designated by the W3C, you're supposed to write about it in a profile URI that goes in your head tag. And I've never seen anyone do it, and actually, I've never done it. I don't think any user agents at this point support it, but kind of good to know.
Excellent point. Yeah, so I've been using the rel attribute for a while with unobtrusive JavaScript, and the way that relates to web accessibility is, like, say for pop-up windows. That's a good example.
Yeah.
If you're doing XHTML strict, you can't use the target attribute. And and if you don't have... Let's see, how can I put this? To make a pop-up window, you... Well,
the old way was to use like on click, but you don't want to do that,
right? And then the next way is using target, and then and all that kind of stuff. We've talked about this before, in a podcast, but it's a good example of unobtrusive JavaScript. The way you do it is you just link to a document like normal, and then in the rel attribute you add. Actually, you could add whatever you want, pop up, or new window, or whatever. Some people use the class attribute, but I think I like to keep the class attributes for style.
Yeah, and use kind of mixing it.
Yeah, and use the rel attribute for because I think that's more descriptive of because you're describing the relationship of that link. So I use the rel attribute in say new window or pop up or whatever. Then with unobtrusive JavaScript, with the DOM in an external JavaScript file, you loop through all your anchors on the page, and you grab any links that have that particular rel attribute, and then you attach the behavior to open that in a new window.
Exactly. So that keeps it all separate. You're not using target, which is depreciated, and you're not using onClick, which is
You're not
intrusive. So
exactly, you're not putting the inline JavaScript. Yeah. And then, so if a person doesn't have JavaScript enabled, the link still works and just opens the page like normal.
Exactly. So perfect way to do it. And people tend to use the rel attribute for unobtrusive JavaScript for pretty much. Anything you can think of in terms of links. I've seen it used with Ajax and like the Lightbox I think I mentioned before. So
cool. Now the Lightbox, is that the thing where you click like a image icon and then it blackens the screen and then opens it up big in the middle of the screen?
Yeah, I mean it's basically kind of a cool thumbnail enlarger sort of script. It works perfectly fine without JavaScript. It's not the greatest. I mean, essentially, you link to an image, and then you use Ajax to load the image on the screen on your current page so that you don't actually leave the page. You can cycle through and stuff like that. But
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, it's fully accessible and a little flashy if you're into that sort of thing.
So if you don't have JavaScript, it just opens the bigger image in your browser.
Yeah. So not the most elegant solution if you don't have JavaScript, but at least it still works.
Right. Sounds good to me. I know that's been getting pretty popular. I've noticed.
Yeah, a lot of people using it in different variations. You know, they've made their own tweaks, and I've seen people who now, instead of just loading an image, they load content into a box like that, which I don't know if I think that's the best way to handle that sort of thing, but
yeah,
who knows.
So
one last thing before we go, actually, there is another attribute to know if you're using RHEL. There's actually the REV attribute, R-E-V, which is like reverse relationship. So the idea being that if you have a help page, and it's for a specific page, like maybe you have sign-in page, and then you have a help page for the sign-in, you can do a link to the sign-in page and specify the relationship as the reverse, and that essentially tells the user agent that this is a help page for the sign-in page, if that makes sense.
Ah, so very good, very good.
Yeah.
Well, there certainly is a lot to know, a lot to learn. We've just in talking about it, we've uncovered more than what we had written in our notes. So I think, with microformats and unobtrusive JavaScript and Web 2.0 and stuff, that this the RHEL attribute is coming a lot more important.
Yeah, I expect to see it used a lot more in the future, especially as browsers get better.
Exactly. Great. Okay, Ross, well, thanks for joining me again today. That was, I think this is going to be a good podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Number 52, the RHEL attribute. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Catch you later.
The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com. webaxe.blogspot.com. Email WebAx at webax@gmail.com. webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.